Well, hello everyone. Been a little bit of drama this past week. I thought that things were going to be dying down before Christmas, especially after my various run-ins with James Lindsay. But yet again, yours truly has been viciously attacked, friends. And I thought I would use the opportunity as a little teachable moment, as the leftists used to say, to talk about some of the fundamentals of power and why this particular attack is pretty misplaced. So I've called this video, "Is It All Accidental or Do Elites Hold Power?" And I'll get on to what the aforementioned drama is in a second. But first, let me just remind you that outside of this channel, probably the thing I'm best known for is writing this book here, The Populist Delusion, a very widely read and bought book, best-selling book on Amazon. And you'll be surprised the number of people who know me purely through this book, i.e. they don't watch this channel, they don't follow me on Twitter, they don't keep up with my various kind of social media life, etc. They haven't read my books on Shakespeare, they haven't read Prophets of Doom. Purely they know me from this book, which is essentially a primer on elite theory. I cover eight thinkers in that book, but the primary purpose of it was to bring Italian elite theory back into, semi-popular, educated, I guess you'd say, consciousness. I wanted people to be thinking in terms of the mechanics, the ABCs, if you want, of power. It's an update of James Burnham's The Machiavellians. James Burnham is one of the eight thinkers I look at. And the three elite theorists, the classical ones, are Vilfredo Pareto, Giordano Mosca, and Robert Michels. Now, the fundamental thesis of this book is that everywhere and always, the minority rule above the majority. An organized minority rules over a disorganized mass. And because of this, notions such as democracy or the popular will or popular sovereignty and whatever other formulations you want are basically delusional and a fiction because basically it's an organized minority every single time, 10 times out of 10, just like an army does not function by asking all of the individual privates what they want to do, but instead functions with a general at the top giving orders down a kind of network pyramid. That is basically how power everywhere and always functions. It has a kind of monarchical structure, you might say. And some of the other thinkers I look at, like Carl Schmitt, Bertrand de Jouvenel, and others take this idea even further than the elite theorists. And what I wanted to do in this book was to dispel liberal, libertarian, bourgeois notions of power somehow being diffuse, power somehow being accidental or emergent. No, it's always an organized minority. Now, one of the interesting things about this basic idea of elite theory and concepts that derive from it, such as the uniparty, that is, there is a permanent oligarchy that is in power, and the two parties, Tory and Labour, or Republican and Democrat, are basically two cheeks of the same arse, if you want to put it that way, or as Peter Hitchens once put it, two zombies leaning against each other. Okay. Now, everybody, kind of in at a gut instinctual level, gets this, understands this, and nods along to it until you start taking it really quite seriously, until you hold to it at all times and at all places. And then you find some of those liberal priors start creeping back in. And I think when we get through the drama we're talking about, you'll see how basically, kind of backdoor liberalism or backdoor democratic thinking, bottom up rather than top down thinking, starts sneaking back in. And this is at the heart of the dispute that I have with the person who I will be talking about in a second. First, though, one of the secondary sources I used in Populist Delusion was this book here. It's called The Myth of the Ruling Class. It's a book on Moscow and the elite by James H. Mizell. Academic book, pretty hard to find, but it's got a little quotation in there that I thought I would pull out because it's got the use of one word I want to kind of focus in on a little bit more, because it's a word that gets people's hackles up, and with some good reason, but I want to linger on it a little bit. So Mizell says, to put it into a facile formula, all elites shall be credited here with what we should like to call the three C's. Group consciousness, that is, they are aware of themselves as a ruling class or as a decision-making elite, okay? Second, coherence, that is, they cohere as a group. Now, there are various different elite groups currently operating in the world today that may tick this definition. Broadly speaking, we like to say it's the managerial class, the Davos man, who recognizes him or herself as part of a definable and distinct ruling class today. But there are other groups that you may be thinking of. I'll leave that to your imagination. And third, there is conspiracy. Now, that word conspiracy, I think people are trained to treat with suspicion, because automatically you think, well, conspiracy equals conspiracy theory. It's Alex Jones, it's the men in the smoky rooms, it's the Illuminati and all of this sort of thing. The school of schizo, as I've called it before, in another video I made called The Schools of the Right. This school, the elite theory, comes from the school of realism, and in fact rejects a lot of school of schizo ideas. I've talked about before, I've talked against the hidden hand, for example. Power actually wants to be seen. Power, even if it wants to remain a secret, cannot help but show itself. It wants to be seen, whether it likes it or not. Unlike the kind of Illuminati idea, where power is always kind of hiding behind closed doors or trying to conceal itself. Actually, in order to function, people really need to know who's in charge. And 9 times out of 10, this does reveal itself. So why am I lingering on this word conspiracy? Because in its small c sense, conspiracy simply means there are groups of people who make plans. Right? A government, in order to do something, needs a plan. Or a ruling class, if such a ruling class exists, needs to gather in rooms, quite literally, and decide what the direction is going to be. Okay. Now, in this world of internet and, instant information, they don't always have to meet in rooms anymore. They can simply send out missives or letters or exchange emails or be part of a Slack chat together, exchange memos. But still, there needs to be some kind of coordination that takes place. Now, another aspect of elite theory that I talk about in Populist Delusion and is central to the ideas of Moscow, Pareto and others, is that the ruling class is divided into two parts. There's the very small part, the very top level, who are called the governing elite. And then there's a much larger section below them, which could even be as great as 10 or 15% of all of society, that are called the non-governing elite. And that includes the intelligentsia, your professors, your journalists, your information class, people who basically police ideas, the boundaries of the discourse. These are all included in the non-governing elite. What Moldberg called the cathedral is essentially what the elite theorists call the non-governing elite, the media plus academia. And there are other ranks of more technical managers in there, Okay, so there's a lot of kind of layers of management in the non-governing elite. Now, because obviously we're talking in, you know, with a country like America or, you know, any of the Western developed nations, that non-governing elite is quite vast. We're talking thousands, even millions of people who belong in that non-governing elite, you know, all of the various ranks of civil servants and, you know, managers of all sorts, really. And it's basically impossible to have a system where all of those individuals in that non-governing elite answer in a centralized army-like system to a general, right? So it's not strictly hierarchical in that sense where, you know, somebody issues an order and then they carry them all out. It's more, that is more diffuse. You know, basically it has to be, because it's going to be impossible to organize that many people in a strict and army-like way. That does not mean, however, that there are not certain people there setting the tempo, or certain key nodes in the system that set the tempo from in a much more centralized way than you may expect. So I've talked before, for example, about how almost every major media network, most journalists basically being lazy, and most newsrooms, whether in Britain, America, or in Europe, are basically hooked up to two central news aggregation services, the Associated Press and Reuters. The Associated Press sends a story down the wire. That goes to every single newsroom in the country and worldwide. The editor then gets that to think, well, what am I going to do with this story? They give it to the individual journalist, who then puts the kind of house spin on that story. And lo and behold, in the touch of a couple of buttons, that Associated News, that Associated Press story or that Reuters story is now multiplied hundreds and thousands of times. The source, there's a single source, the original journalist or whoever it was who put through that Associated Press story. That's the source. But the actual effect is hundreds of different stories from Fox, MSNBC, CNN, BBC, etc., 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 Al Jazeera. You know, they're all hooked up to one news aggregation site. And then they'll put their individual political spins on it, or, you know, their editorial house style. Maybe they'll sling in a bit of opinion here and there. But essentially, that is quite a centralized system. There is a bottleneck where key bits of information in a very short space of time gets to many, many other people, okay? And that's just one part of the system. That's the kind of media system. But there are other examples that you might point to. For example, the CEO of BlackRock is a man called Larry Fink. Now, Larry Fink has under his management about $10 trillion worth of assets. That those assets do not belong to Larry Fink. They belong to thousands, millions of pension holders, private investors, large and small, institutional investors, corporations. It's not his money, but he does manage it, which gives him certain, or gives BlackRock certainly, quite a bit of power within the market. It also means that when the CEO of BlackRock speaks, everybody else takes notice. So he's a pretty big node in the system. And every year, Larry Fink writes a letter to CEOs where he talks about the coming direction, or, you know, the direction of travel for the coming year, and what companies, quote unquote, need to take note of if they don't want to, quote unquote, be left behind. Okay. Now, when Larry Fink says, yeah, you should probably be doing this, if you're the CEO of, let's say, Pepsi or Coca-Cola or some Microsoft, whoever, you're going to want to take notice, because if you don't do those things, and BlackRock and the CEO of BlackRock has said you should do those things, well, there's a chance that BlackRock could start moving. They could start selling shares in your company, for example, and dropping the share price and buying, you know. And so this is a way, one little part of the system that can discipline other parts of the system. Okay. Now it's diffuse. There's not a, it's not a, like a general in an army giving an order. You know, it's less formal than that, but it is certainly one way in which the system may discipline other parts of, you know, one arm of the octopus can discipline the other arms. Okay. And, and one of the interesting things you might do is go back and read Larry Fink's letters to CEOs every single year and then see what actually happened, see the actual decisions that took place. I mean, everybody knows about ESG from a couple of years back. They've kind of dialed that back a bit now, but, you know, it's a good example of how BlackRock can kind of use its power to make things not under its direct control, do things that it wants. Another example that I've talked about before is in the world of academia. Academics need to get something called research grants. That means writing off and trying to get lump sums of money from various different funding bodies. Well, those funding bodies don't just give you that money willy-nilly. They'll say things like, the theme this year is, I don't know, sustainability. If you want to get these pots of money, we're making them available, but only for papers on the theme of sustainability. And lo and behold, all of those academics, all of those minor little nodes in the non-governing elite all start thinking about sustainability. So again, a relatively small number of decision makers in the system can set the tempo for all of the people lower down. And these are some of the ways in which, you know, in that much larger swathe of the non-governing elite, you know, you have people who can kind of set the incentives, if you want to put it that way.
Academic agency.
Now, why am I talking all about all of this at all? Why have I gone into all of these things? Well, the reason is one fellow, HP Zero Lovecraft, who I had on my various levels of slop here. If you notice, this was a slide from a talk I gave earlier this year, and in fact, it was originally on a stream about the neocons, which I may actually re-record because people keep on asking me where these slides are from. They're from a stream I did once called the neocons, which is behind the paywall now. I then included it on a video called What is Slop and What is Not Slop? And one person happened to watch that video was HP Zero Lovecraft. This person here, who I included on level 4, deep cover. I'm not going to explain exactly what these various slop levels are again, but we can have a look at level 4. More intellectual, I described it, can be a tech bro, can be HBD, which is human biodiversity. People who look at race and IQ stats, things like that, can be a neo-reactionary, but essentially, in the final analysis, works to justify the rule one particular group over others. And I've included various other people in there, like Peter Thiel, Yarvin, and the HBD researcher, Creamy. Okay. And he really took exception to being included on this slide, such that he made a big song and dance about it a couple of weeks back when it aired and said, I'm unfollowing you for this, blah, 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 blah. And I just simply said, this too shall pass. You know, I don't really care if this guy wants to unfollow me. I've never been into drama in that way. Well, anyway, woke up yesterday to find that HP Zero Lovecraft had launched an extraordinary attack on me. This was on the 13th of December. He said, Nima Parvini, that's me, is retarded in a peculiar way, which many white people have trouble recognizing as a distinctly ethnic phenomenon. He thinks everything that happens in the entire world is orchestrated by invisible occult forces. My friend, this chap here, Lynn, refers to this as the djinn brain, or djinn brain. Djinn brain doesn't have to refer to literal djinns, which are genies, I believe. It can refer to any occulted nebulous they, including the corporations, the Jews, and even the regime. Corporations, Jews, and regime all do things. But if you look at it how Mr. Parvini uses the word, it's clear that he means djinn. Now, this was an extraordinary attack, especially given the fact that I have written explicitly against this kind of large C conspiracy frame, and that I always explain my work. I always show you the steps in my thinking. I always provide the details. And of course, I've written the aforementioned books explaining exactly why I think the way I do. I have never talked about occult forces, and I have never talked about the elite, the current elite, as if they are all powerful. I've never had this idea. He was talking about my original tweet there, which you can't quite see. I just said every single aspect of what I said would happen after the election has transpired, and nobody who was wrong will ever admit that. What was I talking about? Well, I said, reading various mainstream media headlines and looking at the direction of travel, picking up on regime mood music, as it were, I could kind of tell that everybody was geared up for Donald Trump to be the president. Nobody was preparing for Kamala Harris to be the president. I also said that they'd come to peace with this, and that there wouldn't be any malarkey in the election like in 2020. There wouldn't be any repeats of BLM or Antifa or any rioting. And pretty much it has transpired that way. And if you remember in all those videos where I broke down exactly why I believe that, I simply said a section of the elite, specifically the tech bro billionaires and the Zionists, two important factions, had simply switched sides. And this was a big thing. And that, you know, they had enough allies, basically, you know, in the general scheme of things, that, you know, they were going to accept that Trump was going to be the president again. Now, this is not that controversial, really. Anybody with a pair of eyes could see it coming a mile off. And I explained at every step of the way exactly why I thought that. I even went to the trouble of breaking down the differences between the sorts of Zionists who were backing Trump and the neocons who actually backed Kamala Harris, the original neocons. I provided extremely detailed breakdowns of the factions within the elites. I have talked continuously about the difference between the techno-globalists, broadly speaking, and the neocons, broadly speaking, one of whom, the techno-globalists, are obsessed with globalist institutions, global governance, transnational frameworks, etc. And the second type, who are much more interested in American power specifically, brackets also the power of Israel. And the difference between the neocon, who is much more kind of State Department, American ambition, spreading democracy around the world, and the capital Z, or capital Z, Zionist, is that the latter are much more concerned about the here and now ambitions of what Israel is doing right now, as against the former, who are more committed to things like Project Ukraine, spreading democracy in, you know, this country or that country. Okay, so there's a bit of a split there. It's not that the old neocons don't care about Israel. It's that they have ever competing priorities, whereas the capital Z Zionists have one priority and one priority only, namely helping Israel and making it the number one thing. Okay, I hope that explains that. Well, anyway, what did I have to say to HP Zero Lovecraft as this unfurled? I said, more interesting, and the reason I'm going into this, by the way, is so we can see exactly where I think HP Zero Lovecraft has gone wrong in this attack, and exactly to help you get out of this idea that power is kind of diffuse and bottom up, or that there's nobody driving the car. There is always an organized minority, always. And there are always decision makers. There are people who have the ability to, as Carl Schmitt said, you know, name the exception, if you want to put it that way. Okay, define the exception or interpret the exception. And if you pay attention to what, when exceptions are made and for what reason, you can then start piecing together. You can build up a pattern of such exceptions, and then you can start to see, well, who is it that's really wielding power in the system? Given that 80% of all American politicians are openly and fully paid off by AIPAC, which is a fact they boast about openly on their social media presence and on their websites. And this is one of the most thoroughly researched topics by John Mearsheimer and others. It's not that controversial to say that, you know, the Zionists are pretty influential in Washington. Well, anyway, let's have a look at what I said. More interesting than this flaccid and impotent attack on me is that Zero HB Lovecraft appears to deny the existence of the regime, which he believes is gym-brained, pretty odd post-COVID, post-Ukraine, which he's trying to pass off as intelligent. Elon Musk posted receipts on how the intelligence services bullied Twitter into burying Hunter Biden and other stories. We watched the system walk in lockstep to deny any legal challenges to 2020, the election I'm talking about, at the same time as COVID restrictions were adopted in a coordinated way. My position that there's a regime which coordinates is common sense and observable reality, while yours is midwit territory. And in fact, I would actually completely reverse what HB Zero Lovecraft is saying here. The notion that it's just kind of accidental, it's people who don't really have a clue what they're doing, muddling along and going along with the flow, that may be true at some levels, but in the ultimate analysis, it cannot be true. There is a power structure there. There are decision makers there. And frankly, things like the things that we saw in 2020 with COVID or the election or BLM or various other things, the receipts that we saw on Twitter simply couldn't function without the three C's that Mizell was talking about at the start. Okay? And it's in these areas where you start to see, well, where is the exception being called? Who is somebody's calling those shots there? Okay, and that's where you can start to see the face of power reveal itself a little bit more, because remember, it must be seen. And I don't know if you remember in 2020, speaking out against COVID could get you fired. It could get your channel banned. You know, it could lose you your job. Same with BLM, as I know from personal experience. You know, that was an issue where the system would actually discipline you if you went against the official line. Same with the election. No journalist. I mean, as if by magic, HB Zero Lovecraft, as if by magic, just by accident, all of the corporate press just decided not to touch this story. None of the courts in America would touch this story. The Supreme Court was like, nope, you have no standing. 19 different states had no standing. HB Zero Lovecraft. So, if anything is the gin-brained, it's the notion that there is not some coordinating principle in the system, that there are not people who make actual decisions. I mean, it's fucking mental to believe now in 2024, after all the things we've seen, that these things don't exist. To hold on to your libtarded, bottom-up, nonsensical idea about, oh, well, it's all just emergent. It's not emergent. We've got the receipts. There are entire books written, like Who Paid the Piper, a mind-blowing book, which I'd encourage you to read. I'd encourage you and anybody else to read it, to show just how little the system leaves the chance when it's really invested in something. In Who Paid the Piper, like I said, a book everybody should read, it's actually revealed that James Burnham, one of the godfathers of elite theory that I've already talked about, the author of the Machiavellians, was actually in charge of the secret CIA cultural unit, in charge of like literally paying off historians to write hostile reviews of Arnold Toynbee's study of history. To, you know, back modern art projects and all sorts of areas where you'd be like, what, the CIA are involved in these things? And they're involved in these things. Who Paid the Piper literally tracks James Burnham and a bunch of other spooks inventing the center-left as opposed to the communist left out of thin air. They invented the center-left and then they invented the center-right. James Burnham created National Review with William Buckley. And it was a conspiracy. In the actual classic sense, it was a conspiracy. The receipts are all there. We have all the information. It's a matter of public record. But still, this fuckwit, Zero HB Lovecraft. So, well, actually, if you believe all that, you're the gin brain. And my kind of half-baked idea that everybody just kind of muddles along and it's all an accident because I once watched Yes Minister or some fucking bullshit. That's the kind of properly quote-unquote white non-de-gym brain position, is it? You fucking moron. Anyway, let's continue. Now, a lot of people started attacking HP Zero Lovecraft. He, you know, it didn't really go the way he thought it might. A lot of people were saying, actually, mate, what the fuck are you talking about? And I said, the belief that the regime coordinates can be substantiated and with overwhelming receipts. Your view that somehow it's all chaos or emergent or whatever requires some justification in the current year. This in the year that CNN gave Ghilani an interview a week before they toppled Assad. Then he starts backtracking. I am in no way am I claiming that there's no regime or that it does not coordinate its actions. All right. The much more straightforward and sensible interpretation is that the regime is staffed by incompetent homosexuals and ethnics and that they are not, in fact, omnipotent. I simply said I never said they are omnipotent. I said they signaled quite far in advance that Trump would be the president. And no one expected Kamala to be president, and essays you didn't bother to read, or videos you didn't bother to watch. And he interprets this as, I never said the evil spirits were omnipotent. I just said that everything that happens is caused by evil spirits, whose signs and portents I can read. You know what? I sometimes wonder whether I'm in the Truman Show. I mean, James Lindsay talking about summoning the Archangel Michael and Araman and all this stuff kind of blew my mind a couple of weeks back. Now I have to put up with this bullshit. I said I'm not talking about evil spirits, but often lazy journalists receiving stories down AP or Reuters feeds, Bloomberg and Financial Times having to tell investors what the next 6 months will look like. It's not magic. It's mundane stuff. And you're making a fool of yourself again. And then again, he's imagining a, you know, you're imagining a top where there is nothing but middle. So in H.P., in zero H.P. Lovecraft's conception, there's no top to this structure. It's all middlemen. It's all people kind of in faceless committees, you know, not knowing their ass from their elbow, just all headless chickens all the time, right? That the regime, if you want to put it that way, is just a shit show and nobody knows what they're doing. And I just said, there is a top, a Schmittian exception. For example, it's quite clear that there is literally nothing Israel might do which Washington will sanction in any meaningful way. The data is in on that. Claudine Gay was fired. Leftists arrested. Israel did whatever it wanted. We've seen this now. It's not ambiguous. It's not like, oh, well, in this case they won, but in this case they didn't. No. It's not complex. They have done whatever they wanted, killed God knows how many people, with the full backing of both parties, who are, as a matter of public record, basically paid off by the largest lobby group in America. It's not ambiguous. And that is the top. Because where there's the exception, you can see where sovereignty lays, as per Schmitt. It's really elegant. And it's not the gym-brained. It's not, you know, kind of magical thinking. This is literally just what's happened. H.P. Zero Lovecraft. I believe that no one is in charge, and that every decision is deferred to experts and committees who further defer to other experts and other committees until eventually someone is forced to sign off on something that no one ever designed. I mean, this is patently false, by the way. I remember during COVID, the government of the day, led by Boris Johnson, deferred to the experts. The experts said, well, we've got a plan in place, and that plan is called herd immunity. I remember watching Piers Morgan get, quote unquote, schooled by the Scottish health minister, who said, oh, no, it's fine. Go to the concert. Go to the concert, Piers. It's fine. Because, you know, the science is in. Do you have a master's in health science, Piers? I remember how smug he was. And all the leftists online and everywhere were crowing about this victory that this Scottish health minister had over Piers Morgan. Literally a week later, quote unquote, the science had changed. And all of a sudden, all of these so-called experts had new marching orders. And it was clear as day that those marching orders came from somewhere else. And funny enough, every other country had exactly the same experience, all at the same time. It's weird, that, isn't it? It's weird. How did all the other countries come to the same conclusions at the same time? Clearly, there was an organized minority there. And we have some ideas about who those people were. And in some cases, you know, the organized minority may not be some kind of like shadowy Illuminati. Almost never it's that. It's almost always somebody's got a plan, right? In an environment where MPs are lazy, civil servants are notoriously lazy, the person who wins the day is often the one who has the plan, the off-the-shelf solution, if you want to put it that way. And in this case, the whole lockdown strategy was an off-the-shelf solution that was basically pushed on every government by certain actors within the system. We know some of them. Blair was part of the network that pushed this, as was the Microsoft salesman and various other people who followed that. Not a conspiracy. It's literally a matter of public record. And that is what happened. You can go back and you can watch in real time the change of the U-turn overnight in the strategy. Okay? Clearly, that decision didn't come bottom up. It came top down. Boris Johnson gave an interview the other day in The Spectator where he basically said he was made to do this. So there goes that theory. But anyway, which committee of experts decided it was just cool allowing Israel to do whatever it wants, no matter how many international standards it violates? Good question, OG Roland Rat. Ironically, after calling me the Jim Brain, this position from Zero HB Lovecraft is basically mystical and faith-based. It would suggest that America works like no other observed power in history. The belief that nobody's in charge. And it's weird because this idea that there's nobody at the wheel is actually remarkably widespread, even by people who who've read all of the people I've talked about. They still hold on to this idea that there's nobody in charge. Despite all of the receipts that we've seen, despite all of the events that have taken place, they still believe that there's nobody really in charge. Zero HB Lovecraft. No, I do not think there is design anywhere. There is at most opportunism. There are people who believe in various vague moral propositions, and once in a while they collude to advance local short-term objectives. There is a conspiracy not to rule, blah, blah, blah. This in the week that the CIA and the friends pulled off a regime change in Syria. And remember, all of this started with this fella calling me retarded. Now, it seems to me that Zero HB Lovecraft has seen this carry on, this kind of, incompetence in his own life, in his own workplace. He says it's hard to believe the degree to which even supposedly powerful people will try to please their subordinates and go along with social pressure. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, that's what Claudine Gay did, and she got fired, didn't she? It's funny. It's like they were happy to go along with that stuff until it started affecting, the people who paid the bills, right? In the case of Harvard. Has it ever occurred to you that government, or say the intelligence services, may not work like a software company or wherever it is that you've worked? Everybody's got this idea that everybody is just kind of bumbling along and clueless because they've seen how their own workplace operates. But there are still decision makers, even in those workplaces, and there is still basically a hierarchy, isn't there? And there are still key people at the top of the tree who make important decisions. When those decisions come down, there's no real ambiguity about it. You kind of know which way the decision has gone. Pretty quickly, you find what's important pretty quickly when it comes down to issues they really care about. So anyway, as you can imagine, he was pressed by a lot of people on the Israel question, which really seems to be what this is about. Surprise, surprise. We discovered that this was really what it was about with James Lindsay as well. And he said, I'm not reading all of that. He basically wrote a massive essay trying to explain what is as plain as the nose on your face, which is that America is run by people who really, really, really care about that country in the Middle East. But rather than just say that, he elaborates this and then calls people who quickly and elegantly point out that these are the key decision makers where it really matters. The Jim Brained. It's funny how that happens, really, isn't it? Anyway, yesterday, Zero HB Lovecraft launched a flailing and effeminate, intellectually bankrupt attack on me. But what triggered it all? It was this slide, as I mentioned right at the start. And look at him now, flopping about, writing leftist meme-length essays, trying to explain away Zionist power. It's pathetic, and it's moronic. More of the point, what is the point of trying to pretend as if all power is, like, everybody's just particles being floated along in a stream? I always remember Devin Stack, Blackpilled. Years ago, he did a review of the film Forrest Gump. It's probably still here on YouTube somewhere. I'll drop in a screenshot of it in post-production. And he said this film, Forrest Gump, where Forrest Gump is basically like this kind of low IQ guy who drifts through life but ends up kind of, you know, in many extraordinary situations. And at the start, he's got this whole spiel about life is like a box of chocolates, etc. But during that film, Stack talks about how this is basically like the liberal boomer worldview, that everybody's kind of like these particles being swept along in the stream, and nobody really makes a difference to anything. Okay, that you're all just kind of being swept in a current, you know, like little atoms. So nobody has any agency in this system because, you know, it's like some version of chaos theory. And this really, I think, is what Zero H.B. Lovecraft believes about power, about the regime, and about the system. Now, I think he will claim, or defenders of his will claim, that he's been strawman, despite the fact that I've literally read out his half-baked ideas about power. People will just kind of still claim, somehow, that this is an unfair representation of what this guy said. But it's not, is it? It is literally what he said. And many, many people, I remember I used to present a show with the Britisher. The Britisher is another person who really has like this ingrained idea that nobody ever plans, nobody ever coordinates, that it's all just kind of just like Forrest Gump, people floating along, you know, not knowing their ass from the incompetence at all levels, basically. Now, the thing is, and this is now getting into a level of complexity that is kind of rare, right, when we're talking about the elite theory and these sorts of ideas in general. The fact that there is an organized minority, right, and the fact that they have power right now does not presuppose that they are super rational, that they are super competent, or that they're omnipresent or omnipotent, okay? But they do hold an absolute advantage in certain areas because they have the levers to pull that their opponents do not have, okay? And this is discussed in Political Parties by Robert Michels. The iron law of oligarchy is that absolute advantage in all sorts of areas, okay? In terms of resources, in terms of knowledge, in terms of the actual levers of power, the current incumbent have many things on their side, okay? So even if they're incompetent, and even if there are lots of cowards in the system or lots of like bio-Leninist diversity hires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they still have all those advantages, which is how they maintain, which is how, one, how they maintain power. But two, those advantages go a long way, right? It doesn't mean they're all powerful. It doesn't mean they can't be defeated, et cetera, et cetera. But it does mean that as things stand, they remain in power. And it does mean that they give away certain tells, right? That they have to say, don't forget, they have to signal to each other. Like I said at the start, there's a lot of people in the system. At the very top, it's small. But then in that non-governing elite underneath, there are many, many people, as much as 10, 15% of the population. They have to send signals to each other. They have to, you know, that there has to be a mechanism, like Larry Fink's letter to the CEO that I talked about. There has to be some mechanism to let everybody else know what is happening, okay? And what I said and what I picked up on is that the signals have gone out already, that this woke stuff is being wound down, that Trump is going to come in as the president, that there's actually a new set of priorities in town. People, the country, America and Britain and Europe needs to be more war ready. There's a recruitment crisis in the military. These things need to be ironed out. In order for those things to be ironed out, there needs to be a change in direction in key ways. People need to buy back into the system. All of these things have been signaled in mainstream media if you pay close enough attention. Because who reads the mainstream media? Elites of that non-governing variety, of the headless chicken variety, that Zero H.P. Lovecraft talks about. So even if you have the view that there's very little formal power, right, and it's 99% emergent phenomenon, it's not, by the way, but let's just pretend you believe that, still, those informal signals you can be picked up on, which is essentially what I did when I looked at, you know, when I said, well, Kamala Harris is a jobber and the regime wants Trump. It's gearing up for Trump. And still, not a hint of any riot, not a hint of, no, there's no meltdowns or anything. Everybody just accepts that Trump is the president. Time person of the year, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this was my long rebuttal to Zero H.P. Lovecraft. I'm sure there'll be questions and comments. If you leave a super thanks, I will pick up the question in the next office hours. But that'll do for now. I'll see you tomorrow, everybody. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.